Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome inside the clubhouse right here at Sports Radio 670 The Score. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, talking baseball until 11 o'clock. And like we do each and every Saturday morning, I'm David Haw along with Bruce Levine, asking you to put your busted NCAA tournament brackets aside for a couple hours. Focus your energy, maybe even a little angst, toward the Cubs and the White Sox and opening day right around the corner. Hello, Bruce. How's Arizona?
It is wonderful here, David, and we're sending all the good vibes of baseball from the White Sox and Cubs your way, live from Arizona for the next 2 hours. David in the studios in Chicago, me here in Arizona, and we plan to have a big show for you. Including guests are Jason Hayward of the Cubs and Kendall Graveman of the White Sox. We go up and back between camps. I'll talk all the other 28 teams here on Inside the Clubhouse every Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year. And it's a joy to be able to do this, David.
Yes, it is. We have baseball to discuss, opening day right around the corner. It has been a busy week back and forth. Bruce, you've done a terrific job. And obviously, let's start with the Cubs, because I think Seiya Suzuki's debut on Friday was maybe the biggest headline from a day of spring training. Maybe people disagree. 312-644-6767. What did you see this past week that you want us to talk about or maybe caught your eye? But Bruce, how would you describe Seiya Suzuki's debut? It wasn't a great one at the plate. Two strikeouts, went down looking both times, but the assimilation process, the adjustment period, that has begun, and he seems to be making an impression on his new teammates and certainly his manager.
And he is making national news as well, David. There were seven reporters on stateside from Chicago covering the event, one national person, and 17, count them, 17 Japanese media covering his first at-bats as a Chicago Cub, first appearance as a Chicago Cub. And it was interesting because Suzuki, having talked to him for the first time in a group other than his debut with being announced as a Cub player a week ago, was blanked off, is what he said about his appearance. And what did he do after he came out after two at-bats and three innings in the field? He went to the backfield, to the batting cages, and hit for 45 minutes. So when we did ask him why he did that, he said he was blanked off and that he was hell-bent on the fact that this isn't going to happen to him again, showing a really, really fine engagement with both the Japanese and American media, talking about his sense of humor. Earlier in the day, manager David Ross talked about his sense of humor, making fun of David Ross while he was eating some trail mix and noting that the chocolate had impacted the manager's physique. It was a lot of fun. I think he's going to be a good ball player. A good ball player. And by that, I mean, I don't think anybody should expect a superstar, okay? But I think they should expect a good right fielder, a guy that's going to hit okay. He's going to field okay. I don't think you should feel like this is the next, superstar and that he's going to be in the realm of Ohtani or anything like that.
I think that's an important point to remember for Cub fans. And obviously there's a lot of hype that is understandable. You give somebody an $85 million contract, there's going to be high expectations. But over time, give him time to meet them. You mentioned Ohtani. He is the MVP. He struggled making the adjustment, maybe because of injury, but there's take some time. If you go back to other examples of Japanese players who have made the transition, that first season – it doesn't happen immediately. It doesn't happen overnight. You've got to give these guys room to adapt and adjust and, you know, master some of the things about the new league, the new city, the new country. Bruce, I do think blanked off is kind of understandable in any language, right? So I think that that doesn't need any translation. There are going to be days where he is blanked off because he goes down looking. But I think over time you'll see that professionalism that is already on display, that will help him make the adjustment as long as the Cubs fans, and I think the Cubs will be the, as an organization, but patience is going to be the key word for him early on.
Yeah, I really think so. And you know, if you're a Cub fan, I do preach be patient with this Cub team and their retooling, because there is no more Baez. There is no more Bryant. There is no more Rizzo. Contreras is in his last year. He might be in his last weeks with the Chicago Cubs. Last days with the Chicago Cubs. No contract, a free agent after 2022. These are things to pay attention to. They put together a pitching staff on paper, as far as starters go, that looks better than last year's. Will they be able to do that? Will they be able to make the post and show up every day? We're gonna be watching that as spring training ends in 12 days and the regular season starts with Kyle Hendricks on the mound. Has not been announced, but it's pretty likely that he's going to be the opening day pitcher. So, David, my question to you is, if you're a Cub fan, what are your expectations for 2022?
I think that they are modest, because until they make another move, and I wonder if they're done yet, it looks like they probably are. I have concerns about the rotation. We talked to Tommy Hotovy on the Mullion Haw show. He talked about how that fifth spot is up for grabs. It's a competitive situation. Maybe not what you want necessarily at this stage of spring training. So the pitching concerns me. The bullpen actually has some very interesting arms. Those roles will evolve and develop as they typically do. I don't think the everyday lineup is something that screams, you know, 90 victories. So I think you've got to be patient. I also am curious, Bruce, what happens with Wilson Contreras. Either A, the speculation persists and affects him, or B, he gets off to a great start and you know, he doesn't want to talk contract, but his future is a bit, I think that one of the biggest sources of I don't want to say concern, but a curiosity, because I'm surprised it's as big of an issue as it has become. And they have some unresolved questions. I just think that you're going to have to be patient if you're a Cub fan this year.
What I know, and we'll report here on the Score as we have in the past, is that the Padres and the Yankees are still following Wilson Contreras, and that you know, there are matchups for both teams. The question is, if you're the Cubs and you can't think, and you don't think you're going to sign him to an extension, is he someone you hold on to in 2022, or is it someone that you move and you get more quality for your lineup and younger players for your lineup going forward? I can tell you that the Padres are trying to move either Will Myers or Eric Hosmer from their team. It doesn't excite you to hear those names. Myers has had good years. He still has money left in a contract. Hosmer has 3 years and $60 million left on his contract. So from that perspective, four years left. $20 million this year, $13 million times three after that. So Hosmer would impact the Cubs lineup with a left-handed bat, and a very solid leader in the clubhouse as a first baseman. I don't think that's a very long-term look at your team, but nonetheless, you're going to get back a young player, too, in that deal that would be a part of your future.
Yankees, Padres, those are very interesting teams to speculate about being interested in Wilson Contreras. Good information, Bruce. There's another team that I think Jack from Hillside would like to get into the mix. As we go to where the Score listener line, powered by BetQL, bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Good morning, Jack. What's your idea?
Great. Thank you. Good morning. Yeah, I'm frankly baffled why all this talk all week long is about Wilson Contreras and a trade. The White Sox need a second catcher. Think big, not some, you know, veteran 38-year-old 200 hitter. Wilson Contreras could help the Sox tremendously this year, and Grandel obviously needs more than a part-time catcher. And going forward, so you have either the price for Contreras as a rental, or if there's a sign in trade and a nod in trade, he would look great in the White Sox uniform for 5 years. But so the question is, what do the Cubs get in return? Gavin Sheets looks a hell of a lot better at first base to me for the Cubs than Eric Hosmer, or Oscar Colas, Cespedes, you name it, Mike Rodolfo. They have plenty of pieces the Cubs would be interested in. Why isn't Wilkinson Contreras going to my White Sox? Thank you, fellas.
Jack, great phone call. Bruce, good question. What do you think?
I like it. I like it a lot. Grandel is your catcher, but he would he be better off catching 80 games and DHing the rest of the time or playing first base, a combination of the two? I think a lot of people think that Grandel is a decent catcher, not a great catcher. I believe that defensively, Wilson Contreras is a better physical catcher, whereas Grandel is a better framer of pitchers. It would be a great combination for the two. I like it. I mean, I think there are matchups to come back, but again, will they pull off another trade with the Cubs after the one that didn't quite work out last year?
No, it didn't quite work out, did it, Craig Kimbrel? I don't think so. Before we break, Bruce, I want to ask you this. I take a step back. I do share Jack's kind of curiosity that he expressed, because I think on behalf of whether it's Cub fans or just baseball observers, I don't understand why the Cubs seem more inclined to get rid of Wilson Contreras rather than strike a long-term deal. We have talked about this before, but until we get an answer, I'm going to ask it again. What is it about him that they seem to be resisting or reluctant to embrace? Because to me, he represents everything your organization should be about.
Well, if Wilson Contreras at age 30 is right, he's probably looking for a 5-year deal, okay? I would think the Cubs would be interested in a 3-year deal. And I think having talked to Wilson 2 days ago, he said, no, I don't think we've ever been close on a contract. That's all I have to hear. I don't need to hear any more. I think it's time for Wilson to go somewhere else and sign that long-term deal and bring back a cachet of good players for the Chicago Cubs. Matching that up and getting the players you want, I think, you know, the front office of the Chicago Cubs can take their time a little bit, but with the season beginning rather soon and injuries always looming and curtailing possibilities of trades down the line, I think you have to be careful. You can't be too cute about making a deal for somebody and then all of a sudden realize, you know, he's not the player that he was. Unfortunately, somebody gets injured. So it's the same thing with the White Sox and Craig Kimbrel. They are in the same dangling position with Kimbrel right now.
Yeah, Wilson Contreras, one of three Cubs who won the World Series in 2016. We're going to talk to one of the other guys who was on that team as well. Jason Heyward joins Inside the Clubhouse next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
And now the 1-1 pitch. Heyward hits a drive into right field. It's got a chance. Cubs win the ball game. Game-winning 3-run homer, Jason Heyward.
Maybe that's why they didn't need a right fielder. He was going to hit it out of the yard.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. Talking baseball. That was a highlight from Jason Heyward hitting a home run last year. Ron Coomer, Pat Hughes on the call right here on The Score. You can hear Cubs baseball at 3 o'clock today, Cubs Padres. Before that, you want to be listening because live from Circa out in Las Vegas, we have Matt Spiegel and Dan Bernstein. They are going to do a special Saturday show, 11 to 2, and then stay tuned all day. The Bulls, big game tonight, 6:45 right here, pregame on The Score against the Cavaliers in Cleveland. But Bruce, right now it's time to go to our Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. And that is where we find our guest who was kind enough to join us this morning, Jason Hayward. Good morning, Jason. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing well. A little bit colder here in Chicago than it is in Arizona, but I won't bore you with those details. Snow is falling. How are things going for you so far in this spring training out in Mesa?
Things have been going pretty well. It's a different spring training coming in with a new group of people. And that's, for me, that's an exciting thing to have happen. But when you, come out of a lockout situation and you jump right in, I think it takes a few days for everybody to get settled back into, obviously this is baseball stuff and you can come in whatever kind of shape you want, but just to get acclimated, meeting new people, new names, new guys, and a new group to move forward with. But it's been a lot of fun so far.
Good morning, Jay, and thanks so much for taking some time out for David and myself this morning. It's a pleasure to have you on. I wonder your first impressions of Seiya Suzuki, and you got to play next to him for the first time yesterday, and just some of your thoughts about the way he carries himself and how he's trying to assimilate to life in America and being a teammate with the Chicago Cubs.
Starting off with being a teammate, he's a baseball guy. He loves the game and enjoys the game, and that's a fun vibe to have around. He was sharing with us some of the things that they would go through on a daily basis in Japan when it comes to like an 8-hour practice and sometimes 2-a-days. we talked a little bit about the high school competition. I was asking him about the big tournament that they had there, and he said his team wasn't good enough. But then that led into, him saying he was an infielder first, and, he hit, pretty well at the time, but they said he wasn't good enough to play infield, so he got cut, and then he came back as an outfielder, played right field, won some gold gloves. Obviously, the power numbers and, his at-bats and his approach to the plate speaks for itself. But just seeing and hearing someone talk about a transition, having a little failure and then come out on the other side of that with success, that was awesome. And I also thanked him for, choosing us in Chicago. Coming to the Cubs, we had, of course, the front office felt like we had some space to fill. We had a lot of people depart last year, and, that's the business. But to add someone who wanted to be here and a player who's, coming from Japan, new vibes, like you said, Bruce, coming to the United States, going to be playing American baseball, getting acclimated, I think he picked a very special city to do so.
And, Jason, it just strikes me, early impressions, just the consummate professional. You would expect that a lot of players coming over from Japan, that is that is a consistent trait of those kinds of players. And also the professionalism that you had to show, I think, in moving and being willing to move to center field as somebody who has obviously played most of his career in right field, has the experience there and plays the position very well defensively. How was that conversation and how was that adjustment and what was your thought process in being willing to move and embrace the move to center field?
Between he and I, nothing but respect. Say it just, he wanted to make sure I knew that it was an honor for him to play with me. And, he said it felt like it was a surreal moment to come to our team, but then to play with an outfielder like myself, having won 5 gold gloves, having a reputation that I have as a clubhouse guy and teammate and playing on a lot of winning teams. He said those were moments that, he still can't believe that that's going to be an opportunity that he has to do this summer. This baseball season in Chicago, but great communication. Like I said, he's a baseball guy. He loves the game. He understands outfield and knows the details that we need to be on the same page with. And, in these spring training practices, we've been working and talking, but, for me, moving over to center field, I feel like at times in the past when I've had to do that, I feel like it's kind of been a little unfair to everyone because you have some guys who are coming from other positions and moving to the outfield, which is tough. Outfield is not an easy position to learn on the fly. So for Saya, for him to be coming into our outfield and moving to right field and me moving to center, talking about a guy with a couple gold gloves, you know, someone who knows the position and understands what it's like to have communication, I think it's a lot of fun, but I think it gives us some more depth as well.
That's the voice of Jason Hayward. He's joining us on Inside the Clubhouse for just a few more minutes. David Hall, Bruce Levine, every Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year, talking Chicago baseball with you, the great fans of Chicago. And Jason, when you look at your situation, the place to get reps in center field is not Arizona. High skies, balls flying off the bat, wins. I know you won't make an excuse about it, but this can't be the easiest place to play the outfield when you're in Arizona and moving over to a position that you played, you know, pretty well in at other times, but haven't played a lot of recently. So from that perspective, how do you help train yourself to play the position, knowing that it is a different dynamic, there is a different look of the ball off of the bat, and you have to train to go to two different holes rather than just one?
Well, Bruce, I think, honestly, that's it's a realistic situation to get new reps, because Wrigley is one of the tougher outfields with the wind, with the sun, with the day games, and sometimes with the night games, and not having, you know, the best lighting out there in the outfield. So out here in spring training, I think it's important to focus on, you know, the kind of reps I take, having to use my imagination, making sure I get good jumps, making sure I work on, you know, continue to keep speed up, make sure the legs are feeling good there. But some of the balls off the bat, yeah, they're going to go over my head. But in Wrigley, we have that unique situation where we have the eye, but we have the basket. So it's a great time to work on playing balls off the wall, even when they kick, you know, in ways that wouldn't always happen in other parks. And, you know, as far as the high sky out here with the wind sometimes that we've had even, you know, this early in spring, you know, those are also elements, obviously, we talk about dealing with at Wrigley, where we have to communicate as outfielders, infielders. And so to me, it's ideal when you talk about not having the best conditions to do it in right now. It's just going to make moving forward to Wrigley a little bit easier.
Jason, you've been in Chicago long enough to understand how the fan thinks, whether it's Cub fans or sports fans in the city. And I think I kind of look at the Cubs, and I'm not quite sure what to think in terms of where the stage is and, you know, rebuilding, contending, and there's always somewhere in between. You know, we see the Blackhawks. They talk to Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews about what direction they're headed. And we know what, you know, the Bears, for instance, are trading Khalil Mack. When the Cubs determine, pick a lane, or when they talk about the future, have you been involved in expressing your opinion? You're a respected clubhouse leader. You're a guy who's been through a lot. You've got a World Series ring. How involved have you been in these kinds of conversations, and what would you say to somebody wondering what direction the Cubs are headed?
As far as being involved, you know, I'm here for whoever they bring through. You know, whoever walks in that clubhouse door, I'm always here to help them. Always here to, you know, help them get better, allow them to help, you know, me and my teammates get better, and, you know, all work towards that goal of we want to play baseball in October and we want to have a championship mindset. And I know that sounds cliche, but you talk about this organization and the special things they've done here in the last decade as far as putting a group together, getting guys, you know, in the draft, getting a lot of free agents and making that gel into something special over the past 5-6 years. You know, I would say they've done a commendable job. So, no, I haven't had too much input on that. You know, they have an idea of what they want to do, and they're taking, you know, the time to evaluate. You hear Jed talk about wanting to get a new GM and fresh mindset in, and he brought that in Carter from another organization. So I think they're doing a good job of being well-rounded in that. But that's, you know, those are things I leave up to them. But as far as where we're at, I think it's awesome that we have an opportunity for that to be determined by us. The kind of work we put in, you know, make sure we're able to stay healthy coming into the season. But we have, to me, a similar feel of, you know, what things kind of look like here in 15. Not talking about the success, you know, in the beginning of the season, because I think 2015 – if you ask anybody in the front office, they were saying, oh, well, you know, we're going to probably compete next year, 2016, but this year we want to at least start the group in that direction. To me, you talk about having some of the young guys that we've had here over the years, some of the guys that we've had, you know, from that World Series team, myself, Wilson, and, you know, Kyle Hendricks. You have David Ross here as a manager who has that vibe and has that feel. But you also have a lot of new veterans coming into the spring training clubhouse and also guys that we signed as free agents to where they've been playing baseball. They know what it's like to play in other places. They know what it's like to compete at the highest level and to compete for playoff baseball. So to me, it's a nice mix and gel of the future here, but also guys that have been playing this game that are polished and have an understanding of what it's like to appreciate what you have right in front of you.
Jay, speaking of Wilson Contreras, obviously he's in the same boat that Baez and Bryant and Rizzo were in last year, and that is you're a professional, you do your job, you're going to be a team player all the way, but you're a human being. You will get distracted by the fact that people will be talking to you, people like myself, about your contract status, about where you're going to be next year, about why the Cubs haven't, you and the Cubs have not decided to stay on a long-term deal. What advice can you give to him, or is it just something that you have to go through knowing you went through a similar situation before you came to the Cubs?
I feel like enjoy the game, especially when you have a place like Wrigley to play it in. You have an organization like the Cubs to play for and a fan base. Soak all those moments in because you don't know how long they're going to last, and that's just from a full circle thing. But when it comes down to it, you know, those are just questions people are going to have, and that's fine. They can ask the questions. You know, people want to know. People have jobs to do, but him being the catcher, him being a chance to having a chance this year to DH some and get a breather, but also keep his bat in the lineup. I think those are kind of calming things for him going into this situation, where he has maybe a little more opportunity than he might have had, you know, in years to come. I mean, in years before this. So,
right.
To me, Willie, go have fun, compete, see what it's like with this new team and new vibe, and the rest will take care of itself. Him being the workhorse he is and being a young guy, you know, I think he has a lot of opportunity to play this game for a long time. And, you know, what happens after this year, we'll see. But what I do know is the foundation for that starts right now, and you know, I think he's done a great job.
Final moment or so
baseball,
here while
getting ready for the season.
Final moment or so here with Jason Hayward here on Inside the Clubhouse. Jason, your Instagram post after the first missed deadline during the lockout was strong, and it was critical of Rob Manfred, and it resonated loudly around the league. And then obviously the urgency increased because I think a lot of other players had similar points of view. I just wondered if you think, number one, that had some impact on the way things went in terms of, you know, expressing yourself in the way that you did as strongly as you did, and then what the vibe has been once you guys reconvened. Is it all is forgotten and you're comfortable with the deal, or are there some lingering, you know, bad feelings when you look back at the lockout that was?
After 2020, I think, well, I know that everyone's happy to be playing baseball again with an opportunity to be doing so in front of fans right away. You know, it's been 2 years since we've been able to have fans come into the ballparks and welcome us here in spring training, you know, officially, and then to be able to start an opening day with 100% capacity. So I think everyone's looking forward to that and really happy that we didn't have to worry about missing time to do so. And honestly, I feel like that's everyone's perspective as far as getting out here and playing the game we love. Because, you know, someone like myself who came in 2010, you know, I had opening day, had everything, all the bells and whistles, all the pageantry of the game, America's pastime, and seeing some guys go through that the last couple of years without having a fan base there, without having family be able to come to the games, it was just a, you know, a depressing moment. So, you know, regardless of what this agreement came down to, I feel like everyone was happy enough to want to get out here and play baseball and get back to the fans and enjoy things in that aspect. But as far as that post, to me, that was just wanting to give some people some insight on how things were going. It wasn't about necessarily bashing someone one way or the other, but it was just to say, you know, these are things that I noticed that was going on, that were going on from the start of the lockout to that point in time where they didn't really seem like they wanted to get something done. And they is whoever, you know, you can't put a finger on who exactly it is or whatnot. But I just wanted everybody to see things from our perspective and see what was happening. I know people do not understand all the time when you talk about dollars and cents being made. And, you know, for us, it wasn't even a matter of that. It was like, hey, we want to have a conversation with you guys. You're telling us, okay, this is what you're coming back to us with as far as the proposal. Well, when we made a response, you know, there wasn't really a response to everything. It was, we'll respond to two of these things out of the 10 that we brought to you. So in that sense, that's where I say, you know, they didn't really have any sense of urgency as far as having conversations. But again, like we're all saying, we're glad to have baseball back and we're glad to have fans back at 100%.
Speaking of Chicago and Jason Hayward, congratulations to you and your wife on your first baby. I know the baby's doing well, and we're happy about that, Jay. Why Chicago? Here you come to Chicago, you get a big contract, but most guys that come from other places do not stay and live in Chicago in the off season. It's not, as we know, the most ideal conditions living here in the winter time. However, you've started a foundation. You've made an impact with your foundation in Chicago. You've embraced Chicago, staying here with your family. Why do you do that? And what drove you to becoming the Chicagoan and the type of person that's immersed in the Chicago landscape the way you have?
I mean, it starts with seeing Chicago as a city itself and the opportunity for everyone, no matter, you know, what the income is, where your family lives. There are certain things in the city that everyone can enjoy on a daily basis. You know, talk about the lake, talk about the Riverwalk, some of the beautiful parks we have in the city, the fireworks, all the events that bring cultures together and people together. You know, you can do that no matter what, just by taking a walk and observing, right? You know, of course, you do have the winter times like you're talking about, but you know, for me, being a part of the Cubs organization, having a chance to work out at Wrigley, having a chance to get out and get in some other facilities and work out in the city just to enjoy living in Chicago, you know, as a whole, and letting that come full circle, it just makes you appreciate the summertime that much more, right? We get the fans out at the games, the day games, being able to go to dinner and vibe and see everyone actually appreciating the city. And when you talk about giving back, it's just awesome to see people really appreciate that. And to have so many people that are networking and trying to get things done, you know, certain things to me, just by being myself who I am, coming across, you know, other athletes, coming across some people that I've been introduced to, everyone has had a vision of making sure they can do the best they can to put Chicago in good hands and give these kids side on the south side, you know, a great opportunity to be a part of their future. And to me, that's always been something I've been a part of anyway, just wanting to see inner city kids, wanting to see minorities have opportunities. So when you're able to partner with great people like By the Hand Community, Intentional Sports reaching out to me and wanting to have something happen on the baseball academy side, you know, those are opportunities that, you know, I dreamed of, you know, when I got drafted, and saying I want to be able to help kids. I want to be able to make an impact and leave something behind that a community and a city will forever appreciate. So to me, Chicago as a whole, obviously the food's amazing. Summertime's amazing. This game, some Blackhawks games, and just appreciating what you got.
What a tremendous example. Jason, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck this season, and enjoy Arizona before you come back to Chicago when you freeze.
Hey, I can't wait to get back to Wrigley and see everybody out there. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Jason,
thanks,
Hayward.
Jay.
Bruce, that was great. What a tremendous example for not only the youth in Chicago, the youth that watch him play and hear what he has to say, just as a consummate professional that his teammates can obviously learn from as well, just his example.
What I like the most about Jason Hayward is that whether he is doing well on the field or not, you never see a difference in the way that he talks, the way that he carries himself, the way that he's a teammate, the way that he deals with the media and the fan base. The consistency is remarkable considering the up and downs that he's had during his career here and having to deal with hearing about, you know, whether he's worth the contract or not consistently through the 6 years that he's been a Chicago Cub.
His contract makes him easy to criticize. I've always said this, but his example makes him one of the easiest guys also to respect in town. All right, we're going to shift gears. We're going to talk about some other guys who we have respect for, the White Sox, and what are they up to over in Glendale. Bruce has been there. He has talked to the people involved. We will talk White Sox when we come back. Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Well, one of the things with him, he had a well-earned reputation. And when you see it yourself, I mean, already first day or two, I met you, Graveman, at the same time. First day or two, these guys are just... And if you watch him closely, you know, he has fun. He never takes an inning off. He never takes a practice off. Him and T.A. are great together.
Welcome back inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. That was Tony La Russa talking about his new second baseman, Josh Harrison. And Bruce, that's one of the questions the White Sox needed to address this spring training. Right field, there's a position open there for someone to step forward and to take hold of. A lot of speculation about what they're going to do. Michael Conforto is still on the market. I still think that starting pitching is the biggest concern in terms of needing to go out and make a move if you're Rick Hahn. Where does that stand in Sox camp, and what other things have stood out this past week?
Well, it's a good question, David, and it's a good topic. Here's your rotation. You got Lynn, Cease, Giolito, Keuchel, and Kopech. Kopech's going to be limited to probably 125 or 130 innings, okay? That means he's going to be skipped at certain points. That leaves another opening for a sixth pitcher, a starting pitcher, and a quasi-starting pitcher long man. Ronaldo Lopez is perfect for that spot. Vince Velasquez, who came over from Philadelphia and is pitching again today, is also getting starts here and is being looked at as the same type of swingman, starting pitcher, long man, bullpen guy. But adding another pitcher and a guy like Manaea or another pitcher out there that could help the Chicago White Sox is probably something they're still looking at. I think Manaea does fit for the Chicago White Sox. Just depends on whether the White Sox have the proper matchup with young players that Oakland is seeking coming back. Oakland's in a position of rebuilding, and they want guys that they can control for a long period of time. That means that they would prefer younger minor league players that they can develop, similar to you know, some of the other trades that they've made, including with the White Sox, who you know, they traded with and had success with in the Jeff Samardzija trade. Mm-hmm. Just look back and see the cachet of players that they got for Samardzija and how they developed over the years for Oakland, including Marcus Semien. So from that perspective, they have been good trade partners there. I still think they'll make a run at Manaea.
Don't want to overlook the headline from Friday in Sox camp. Yermín Mercedes broke his left hand. That's going to be a 6 to 8 week recovery, it sounds like, Bruce. I don't know where he was in their plans or if he was part of any trade conversations, if there was a market for him. You talk about the younger minor leaguers. He's not one of those. Mike Rodolfo isn't either. But are these the kind of guys that come up in trade talks, or are they guys who just have to, you know, hope that there's going to be another last chance, last gasp with the White Sox, if you will?
Well, the first player that anyone's going to ask for is Vaughn. Okay, they're going to say, look, we're giving you a starting pitcher. He's going to impact your team. We need an impact player. We love Vaughn. And even Oakland, with only 5 years remaining for Vaughn, contract control would certainly perk up if they knew he was available. I do not believe the White Sox will trade Vaughn. They believe too much in him as a hitter. him with his makeup, him with his ability to be a part of a championship. I just don't think that's going to happen. You know, Sheets is another story. It's a left-handed bat. It's a power bat. He came a long way last year and impacted.
Bruce, we're having a little time, a little trouble connecting. Reconnect, if you will. You're talking about Gavin Sheets and the right field conundrum. 312-644-6767. What should the White Sox do at right field, at second base, at starting pitching, in the bullpen? Craig Kimbrell is still there. He's a guy that will be the source of much speculation. You have other teams that are involved besides the A's potentially, and you wonder if, as I said this week on Mullen
can
Hawk.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, Bruce. What we're talking about is, do you go into the season and you kind of wait and see who else emerges, how your team is looking, who comes through that maybe you didn't expect it. And nobody wants to necessarily you're not removing the sense of urgency. You're not saying anything, this is a World Series contender, but you're just taking the slow route there and maybe see who else is out there once the season starts and identify the trade deadline as maybe more of a realistic deadline to get your starting pitching addressed.
Yeah, I don't think there's a rush here. I don't know if they feel they're being pushed by Oakland because they feel that Manaea and Frankie Montas is going to be traded rather soon here. They've made some other deals. So I think the urgency is all about where Oakland is with the player and whether or not players like this will be available down the line, David.
And that's going to be something that Rick Hahn continues to monitor. When you look at Josh Harrison, as we came into it, Tony La Russa has a confidence in. Before we break, Bruce, is that a situation that you think you're comfortable with? Lurie Garcia, Josh Harrison as the platoon system at second base. Is that an upgrade?
Yeah, I think it is. Harrison has had a resurgence in his career. I wrote a story a couple days ago on our website, 670thescore.com, about him. And La Russa has been raving about not only the player and the way that he approaches it, but the energy and the teamwork that he brings with, and just the way that he went straight into the clubhouse, became a part of what's going on there, embraced Anderson, embraced Garcia, is a real pro that I think will be a really nice platoon for the White Sox at second base with Garcia. You know, David, La Russa loves the type of player like Garcia that can go and play a second, third, and fourth position above average defensively. We're in an era where we hear all the time about managers saying, well, we want you to play three positions. But guys don't normally play those positions all that well. In the case of Garcia, he is adept and adroit at being able to play shortstop, second base, center field, the corner outfield, third base. He's a very valuable man getting 125 games in those positions. I think they would like Harrison to be the starting second baseman most of the time, and then getting a break here, being a veteran with Garcia going in there against certain right-handers and platooning at that position.
And Bruce, you wrote another nice story about another player who is adept and adroit at playing several positions. He plays for the Cubs. His name is Nico Hoerner, and 670thescore.com. You can check out what Bruce had to say about him. I want to talk about that story next here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.